Vitejte v Manchester, Chav Vav, je Tavši Pejtalet, Rav Benjamin Simmons.
Can I start meantime? Yeah? Okay. Okay, good morning. The topic for today is, as we are in the middle of a general election campaign, we're going to speak about the question of halacha and democracy and how halacha and democracy will, can, or may fit together. There's a very common assumption that a democratic process conflicts with halacha. And we're going to see that that is actually not correct. It's a simplified view. It's a very simplistic approach to the topic. So just to start with a famous quote from Winston Churchill, who said that democracy is the worst form of government except for all the others. So we know a system that we have a system of government in the Western world and in other parts of the world, which is based on two ideas: the idea of the consent of the governed and the idea of the rule of law. So those two things are very fundamental concepts that we have that mean that our society is governed in a certain way, which creates rights for individuals. So there are different parts to this discussion, and I'm going to concentrate on the question of the consent of the governed and the idea of the electoral process and how that's understood in halacha. So let's just go for 5 minutes, just go back to the very beginning to understand the idea of having a system of law. You have to have a system of law. It's one of the Shiva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, one of the seven laws of the sons of Noach, that we have to have a proper system of law. Otherwise, there's chaos in society, which happens sometimes even if there is a system of law, but it happens hopefully less when there is a proper system of law in place. And we learn that on page 1, if everyone looks at the sources, that's part of the Shiva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. And then we have also the concept of how Jews are to live in society, within society, and the concept of having proper government, and that is seen in Yirmiyahu chapter 29. A few years ago I spoke about the tefillah for the sovereign state, and we learned that pasuk, V'dirshu Hashalom E'ashe Eglesi Eskam Shoma, V'hispalalu Ba'adah, and we should daven to Hashem, Ki Bishlomo Yelochem Shalom, because in its peace you will have peace. So as Jews we value the idea of a civic society which is governed by law, and that's also in Pirkei Avos as well, for maybe we do it for very practical reasons, because we're frightened of what happens when there isn't, because if there's ever anarchy, that means Jews suffer also much worse when there's anarchy. So therefore we value the idea of an orderly society. But then we come to, how do we create that orderly society? How do we do that? So the standard understanding, if we read our sources, we read Nach, etc., is that we have a king, and we have some kind of king who rules society. And there is, like there is in every system in the world, there is a separation. In every democratic system, there's a separation of what's called in English constitutional law, a separation of powers. That means there are different parts of the state. There's the administration, there's the judiciary which decides, and there's the political arm of the state, the parliament, the elected representatives. And in Judaism, in halacha, there's also the religious element of the state. But in Judaism, it is a very interesting model. It goes back a long time. The idea of a king being totally, absolutely, having absolute power is not actually correct. Because if we know ourselves, if you just look at Parashat Shoftim, and you see the basic story that the Torah tells you about a king, is although he has a lot of power, he doesn't have absolute power. And the most important thing that the king can't do is he can't break the Torah. The king is bound by the Torah in exactly the same way as every other person. Rav Hirsch says the king is the supreme Jew. He's supposed to live his life as a Jewish person in the best way possible and set an example for everybody else. So the idea of what we have in the concept of an absolute monarchy, a king who has total unfettered power, is not a Jewish idea. We have something which is very similar to what we have in was happening in Europe as it gradually evolved. It's a qualified monarchy, a constitutional monarchy. So there's somewhere in between, you say, a king like Pharaoh of Egypt or Nebuchadnezzar, who had total power and could do anything you wanted to, basically. Coming down from that to what we have today in England, which is a constitutional monarchy, which is where the royal family and the king is only a titular head, does not actually have any power. The king, as they say, reigns but does not rule. So Somewhere in between that, we have the idea of a Jewish king, as it's set out in Torah and in the Rambam, especially. Rambam speaks about it a lot, where you have a king who does have power, but a qualified power. So the idea that the king has total power is not correct. But that's where we see the actual sources. So we know that kings have made mistakes, who've used their power wrongly. For example, the story of Novos in Melachim, where the king used his power through his wife, Isabel, he used his power to execute somebody who was not guilty of a crime. That is a total anathema to Jewish law, and we know what happened at the end. We know what happened. In fact, we've just learned it in Menachshir, what happens at the end in Melachim Beis, when they all come, justice in the end comes to its own, and they're all punished for what they did, and everyone sees that the idea of a monarch who could do what he wants is ever saying, well, you're the king, you can do what you want. That is not true, not true in Judaism. So that question is, how then do we govern? How do we govern society? And we'll see there's a separation from that point, which we can hopefully understand our process and see where our process fits in. So, if we go to Parashat Shoftim, we'll see that there's a machlokes rishonim about whether the idea of a king at all, is a mandatory mitzvah. Is it a mitzvah that you have to do, or is it a mitzvah that you can do? So some of the rishonim, I've quoted them on various places in the source, some of the rishonim have different views. So Rabbeinu Bechaya says, this one's at the top of page 2, he says very clearly, you shall make a king for yourself. According to the plain meaning of the text, the Torah commands the people to appoint a formal king at some time in the future. It is one of the three commandments which take place where after the people come into the lands of Israel. So therefore, that according to Rabbeinu Bechaya and others, if you look there on the page we've shown him, you'll see that several others hold the same view, and that it's a mitzvah, you have to have a king. And then the Torah sets out what are the powers of the king, what the king can and can't do. So that's the system of government, that's the system of rulership. Aside the king, you would have the religious leadership, the Sanhedrin, the Kohanim, the Kohen Gadol, etc. And of course the Talmidei Chachamim, who would support that whole system, that's on that side. And then of course on the other side you have the king and his advisors doing various different things which they have to do. But not everybody agrees with that. So very famously the Ibn Ezra, also on page 2 at the bottom, the Ibn Ezra says, Soim Tosim, says the Ibn Ezra, Rishus. This is a Rishus. If you want a king, you can have a king. And if you don't want a king, you don't have to have a king. It's a choice that you have to make. Seems very simple. Therefore, that's not the only system of government from that. Now, on this, there is a Netziv. And a Netziv is really very, very, opens up the whole discussion for us. So the Netziv, I left the Chumash over there, but the Netziv says, okay, you've got reprinted there most of what the Netziv says. Okay, so we can have a look at it. So the Netziv is basing himself on Ibn Ezra, and Ibn Ezra's view that it's a Rishus, and he says the idea is like this. We go into Parashas Re'eh, and we see that the Torah gives us a mitzvah of Shechita. So before in the Midbar, the people only, if they wanted meat, they had to do it as a korban. The Torah in Parashas Re'eh says, when you come into the land, when you're no longer in the Midbar, if you want to eat meat, then you have to do Shechita. It says there, V'amarta ochel avasa. I will say, I would like to eat meat. And then the Torah tells you, commands you how you eat meat. So the Netziv says, this is the same Loshon as we say here. V'amarta, you will say, Asima alai melech. I will put a king for me on myself. So the Netziv says, basically, we'll read the words in a minute, but the Netziv says that in the same way, it's a choice whether you want to eat meat or not, not going into the issue of vegetarianism, but basically, apart from maybe a few occasions when it's mandatory to have meat, if you bring a korban or korban pesach, or maybe a Shabbos and Yom Tov, depending on how you want to learn those halachas. But most of the time, you can choose, if you don't want to have meat, you've no obligation to have meat. For amarta ochel avasa. And then, if you have meat, then you have to do shechita. And you have to prepare the animal, as we know, according to halacha. So as in the Netziv, it's the same idea with a king, exactly the same lashon. But amarta, asim alai melech, if you want a king, you can have one. But if you don't want one, then don't have one. But if you do have one, it has to follow a certain pattern. You have to go in accordance with the structure. Let's look at the words of the Netziv. I'll just read the English of the Netziv on page 3. Okay. So the Nasiv says, and you shall say. The explanation of saying here is not like its simple meaning, but rather like its usage in the phrase in Devarim, and you shall say, I want to eat meat, and in similar instances. However, according to this usage, says the Nasiv, translated, it is implied that this is not an absolute commandment to appoint a king, but rather optional, as in the case of, and you shall say, I want to eat meat. And behold, it is known in the words of the sages, who say, that there is a commandment to appoint a king. That's the other Rishonim. But if so, why is it written on Mavo, on Maritor? Says the Nasiv, why is it, doesn't the Torah just say, or however you want to introduce it, Soim Tosim Alech Omelech, this is Wams, Ki, Savayla, Oretz, Soim Tosim Alech Omelech, you will have a king on yourself. It doesn't say that. Says the Nasiv, it appears that this is because the government of a state depends on whether it is run according to the opinion of a monarchy or according to the opinion of the people and its representatives. That's what the Nasiv says. And there are states that cannot support the opinion of a monarchy, and there are states that without a king are like a ship without a captain. So saying the Nasiv is just clearly opening up there, and bear in mind when the Nasiv lived, we can see that context, yeah? Democracy wasn't invented in the 19th century or the 18th century. All right? The idea of democracy goes back much earlier than that, we'll see. The idea is that a system of government is much earlier than that. But of course, from the time of ancient Greece, when perhaps you can argue the idea was first created, there was many, many, many centuries of darkness because of the fact that countries were ruled by absolute rulers who controlled people's lives and basically used their power to make life miserable for people for century after century after century. So we know that in the 18th and 19th centuries, the system of democracy, which has got its roots going back a long time, we're told, Britain, England, is the mother of democracies, because that was one of the first countries in the world to introduce it as a static system, which then became a model for everybody else. Yeah? And so you can see that the Nasiv there is saying very, very clearly that there's a possibility that you can have a different system of government, even for the Jewish people. He says there are some people, there are times when this would apply. And if we look through Nach, we see quite clearly that's the case. So we have a time in the book of Shoftim where we have a different model of leadership altogether. A different model, it seems to have been, and it's discussion, what happened? We know the Shoftim came and went, and then there was a period of peace, and then there was a war, then another Shoftim came, then there was a quiet period. What happened in between? What happened in between the different Shoftim? So it says at the end of Shoftim, Bayomim Ahaim, Ein Melech B'Yisrael, Ish Kala Yosha B'Ein Ov Yas, everybody did what they wanted, which is probably more or less what they do today. But yeah, the kind of idea that there's definitely not a consistent model of people doing it. And of course, we have a question, the big question, which is why when Shmuel, in the time of Shmuel, they came to Shmuel and said, we want a king, that Shmuel basically was extremely angry with the people. And why that was the case, you have to examine why at that point they wanted a king. Maybe it's because they said, we want a king like all the nations. Maybe it's other reasons. All the Rishonim discussed that question. Why Shmuel was so angry at that particular time. But we can see that it definitely wasn't that fact that a king had to be and had to be all through all of those times that the Jewish people lived in their own place with their own land, their own systems, their own life, but they didn't have a king for a long time. And in fact, if we look through Melachim, especially Melachim Beis, we realise actually that the king did not always bring the best outcome for the people. Fortunately, I teach Melachim Beis a lot in different venues, but you go through Melachim Beis and you realise that a lot of the kings were pretty far, far, far off the mark of what a king was supposed to be. And that is, so you can see that it's not exactly what has to be such a great model for people. It so much depends, a king depends on the personality of a person so much. So just continue the narrative, and such a thing cannot be done according to the coercion of a positive commandment. It doesn't have the force of a mitzvah, as I say, since a matter that is relevant to the government or the public touches upon mortal danger, sakonos nefashos, which pushes off a positive commandment. So he says, it could be a sakona, therefore it's not going to happen. If it shouldn't always happen, won't always happen. For this reason, it is impossible to absolutely command the appointment of a king as long as it is without the consent of the people to support the yoke of a king as a result of the seeing states around them, etc. So Nassim is saying there's definitely an element of consent. There has to be a consent of the governed. That is part of it, according to Nassim, and that's really, really important understanding that as far as we are concerned, here or anywhere else for that matter, that that the king doesn't have to be a king. He's certainly not an absolute king, and there's an element of the concept of election, of choice of the people in order to govern. We'll see in a second. And we know clearly the source of the idea of a majority is a well-founded idea in Judaism. Okay, so there's two basic ideas here, just to briefly show the ideas. The first one is, of course, when the Torah says, Lo siya acharei rabim leroi, on page 3, v'lo sana ariv, you can't use a majority to do wrong. So, the Torah is telling us, look at Chazal say, you can use a majority. Majority is a good thing. Sanhedrin works on the basis of majority. Use a majority, but don't use a majority to do wrong. But the idea that we do resolve disputes by a majority absolutely is clearly set out as part of the Jewish way of thinking. And the Rambam, Nechus Mamrin says, page 4, he's commanded us to follow a majority where there's a disagreement amongst the sages about any of the laws of the Torah. So we know that's how it works. Acharei Rabim Lahatos. In Torah, that's how it works. And likewise, we should be drawn and directed in a private decision by way of illustration between Reuven and Shimon and the disagreement between the judges of the city where the Reuven is liable. We are drawn after the majority. That's what the Rambam says quite clearly. That's how we decide it. The idea of one man imposing a decision on other people is really only when there's consent. When the people come to the Dayan and they say, we appoint you as the Dayan to sit as the Dayan, you will be the arbitrator, whatever you say, we will do. As we know, sometimes people say that before they go in, but when they come out and it doesn't go for them, then, oh well, we didn't actually mean that. But in terms of deciding, you can do it with consent, but if there's no consent, then clearly, acharei rabim lahatos, and that's Gemara in Chulin, which clearly establishes that principle. So, if we haven't got the principle of having to have a king, we are not definitely required to have a king, then we've got the question of how do we decide, and we see from the Torah quite clearly that majority through a process is definitely irrelevant to that. And then we come to in Shulchan Aruch and a very clear understanding of this concept called Tovei Ha'ir, which is not so well known concept. So Tovei Ha'ir is basically a democratic process that you have to decide certain principles. It comes up in Choshen Mishpat, they are brought in there from Choshen Mishpat. There's a remark there in Choshen Mishpat, I just found the exact line. He says, he says, oh, well, I'll read through it. In Roim Sha'am Perutzim Ba'averos, Donim Bain Misa, Bain Mamon, Chol Dini Oinesh, but Afilo Ein Dover Eidos, I'm just trying to find the exact line. He says there that you appoint Tuvei Ha'er. Okay, the Mishnah Berurah there in Arachayim says very clearly the idea that we used it there. We go on the second line. Einam Rashom Laharidah Mekudosh says you can't change a shul for to something else. V'hainu k'shemachru b'nei shalom idas parnoseim v'huadim machru zayin tuvei ha'ir shalom ha'mamad anshe ha'ir. And the concept is that you have zayin tuvei ha'ir, seven people, right, who would be elected by the people, and they would represent the community in order to decide various conditions and situations that you have in society. So you see clearly the governance of a Jewish environment, a Jewish town, a Jewish village, a Jewish situation can be done by the majority. The concept of Tuvei is very interesting how it's evolved. So I've had questions in the community. So Dan Berger's explained to me that today when a shul has, in the modern, like in England, when shuls have executives and committees, so in each community, the status of the committee, of the shul, the wider representative body, is usually going to be, so we now shall have a committee and we have an executive, so the committee has the status of Tuvei Ha'ir in most cases. It's the wider representative body. They are elected by the shul members and they decide they can override an executive decision. The executives are the ones who carry it out. So it depends on your community constitution structure. We have a formalized constitution. Then they have the din of Tuvei Ha'ir in that community. Can we say there is tuva'ayah in Manchester Jewish community? I don't think so, right? There'd be 400,000 tuva'ayah, I think, each Jew's got five opinions, and they're all tuva'ayah, but it's very difficult. But maybe in a place like Gateshead, maybe you'd be able to say there could be such a thing. Definitely in places in Eretz Yisrael, you go to Moshavim and Yishuvim, where they have definitely like a representative body that make decisions with the Rav. And it's very interesting, the Baba Shereba has a whole letter about how that relationship works between the Rav and the Tuvei Ha'ir. But they are elected representatives of the community who then do look after the town on behalf of people and make various decisions. So I want to now show you how that going to work, how that works. So what we've seen is clearly that there is an alternative, there's definitely an alternative model than a king. Does democracy conflict with halacha? So the answer lies in what you're using democracy for. There's a difference between making the law and administering the law. As far as making the law is concerned, in most cases, we can't use an elective process to make the law, because the law is the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, we can't change the law. So in the way that it works in England, you elect the members of parliament. From members of parliament, the government is chosen, and then you get a prime minister who's overall, or maybe as in the last few years, you get a few prime ministers. Yeah, but you get a prime minister who then runs the show. That parliament has two functions, right? One is that it's making laws, and the other one is that it's choosing those people who run the show, who run the laws, who administer the laws. There's two different roles in the way it works in Britain, the clear separation of powers, but parliament has two roles, the House of Commons and the House of Lords together. They make that we can't do. So in most cases, with one few exceptions, which I'll show you in a second. So democracy to say we'll elect a parliament and parliament will make a law saying that we'll now make a law. They said they made a law that, I'm not getting into the politics of it, I'm just giving this as an example, okay? That they made a law, Rwanda is a safe country. Okay, so is Rwanda a safe country? I have not the faintest clue. But you can make a law that this table is a chair, but it doesn't mean anything, because you can't. So in the same way, you can't make a law to say that you can do something connected to the Torah. As Jews, the law, you can't make democracy a system to change the Torah. Chas v'shalom. That's 30. You've got to give more principles of faith. Shazai satara lois heimuch lefes. But when it comes to the implementation of the law, who is going to look after it? Who's going to run the show? Who's going to decide? How are we going to do all the things? Perfect Jewish society, everything's working as it should be. Shabbos and Yom Tov, and we have everything going perfectly, kashrus, everything we'd like to see when Mashiach comes. The way that that's run, who does it? Which departments will run it, the government, and today will be really complicated, because life is complicated. We have so many more things that we're doing in our lives. Yeah, we have to have people who run all the tax, who's going to collect the tax. That certainly can be done by elected representatives. There's no question. That's the Tuvei model. You don't have to have a king to do that. You don't need a king and his advisors. You can have a government, an elected government, to do that. So there's this difference between... Yeah, so the tshuva, so you'll see that as tshuvas, various tshuvas in practice. You can choose them if they have the consent of people, but they also can be elected. Yeah, they can be elected. And if the various, we're showing, saying the tshuvas, that if you elect the tshuva, they are binding on their decisions are binding on behalf of the people of that city or that community, depending when it is. Yeah, so they can come in two ways. They can't appoint themselves. They can't appoint themselves, that's for sure. And they're not hereditary either. So it doesn't just pass from one to their ear, his son just automatically becomes the next to their ear. That doesn't happen. For sure that doesn't happen. Okay, it's an interesting question. Okay, so we have a difference between the creation of law and the implementation of law. And that makes a big difference. So democracy definitely can fit with regard to implementation and the running of society. There's no essential conflict at all in that issue, I would suggest. Others may think differently, but I'm just suggesting, I'm positing this, looking at the Netziv, looking at the sources, looking at the concept of Tuvah. When it comes to implementation, there isn't an issue. There's also this question, okay, which is that there's a wide area today in society where perhaps we don't have a strict Shulchan Aruch about it. So some people will say, I'm putting myself out, just say, some people will say, well, question of like using the roads. Okay, so all the regulations that are made for the roads, I know that might not go down exactly very well here in Broughton Park, you know, like you're not supposed to park here and you're not supposed to speed over there, you know, those kind of rules, which people tend to not so think so positively about, but just as using it as an example, okay? So how would you decide how a car should be, and my car's got to have its MOT, right? What should be the size of the tyres? What should be the, you know, the regulation for the emissions of fuel from the car? Those kind of laws don't come in the Torah itself. So you could say, well, we have to ask a God al-Hadar, and the God al-Hadar will decide. I'm not sure about that. I don't think it conflicts with the Torah at all. It's just the general administration of society, which every city had to make. So in Europe, we go back a few hundred years, we have the Vad Arba Harotzos, which made laws for the regulation of the whole of society. So you want to decide what's called safe for a car. What's the width of the tyres? What are the emissions? How you implement that? Do you have police? Do you speed on bearing? Don't you speed? Do you have the cameras? Do you dodge the cameras? Whatever it is that you're going to do, those kind of laws are well within to be made on a democratic process to decide we're going to do those kinds of things. Are we going to be, say, for example, a member of the EU or anything like that? There's no reason why those laws cannot be decided by those who are elected by the people on an elected process. Are we going to have in Manchester, we're going to have a, what was the vote for a few years ago, we're going to have a charge for going to the city centre, you know, the fuel charge, the emissions charge, all those kind of things, water, all those different systems that we have in our complex society. I don't see any reason why halacha conflicts with the idea you elect people who then will, of course, if they come to a situation, then there's a halacha which comes into play. So planning regulations, yeah, you've got a planning issue, so you've got planning, how you build a house, how big, of course, then you've got halachas in Baba Basra and all those halachas about where you can put certain things. Then you might have to go for getting a decision or from a Beis Din or from a Paisek to decide how does that interact. But a lot of it, the size of the building, the width, what kind of bricks you use, this cladding, that cladding, all those kind of laws can be done by a democratically elected system. No reason why not. Lubavitcher Rebbe speaks about the idea of having from religious Orthodox Shomer Torah Mitzvahs representatives. As being to help that process. I assume he was talking about in New York, but it's a good thing because obviously it helps society. So we see that there isn't really a massive issue. Just that I've got 2 minutes to finish off. So there's a very interesting Rav Hirsch, which I've quoted on page 5, which has been used. Rav Hirsch does not use the word democracy. Haftorah is the Haftorah of Shabbos Chol HaMoed Sukkos, and he's talking about the War of Gog and Magog. Okay, so we know it's Gog and Magog. It says Ge Hamon Gog, right? If you look at the Pesukim, Ivrim Ba'aretz, etc., it says V'kibru Ois Hamakabrim El Ge Hamon Gog V'gam Sham Ir Hamona V'tiaru Ha'aretz. So Rav Hirsch speaks about the concept of Hamona, about the swaying masses. Hamon mean Hamon Arm, a lot of people, society in the end, the society which will prevail will that of the Hamona, its Hamon, its swaying masses. So some people want to say, I've not seen, maybe anyone knows the original German, but in the English translations of Rav Hirsch's poetry, he doesn't use the word democracy, but people suggest that that's what he was talking about. He was talking about that the eventuality will be, there'll be a society which will be swayed by the masses. Hamoin. Hamoin, not it's Hamoin, and that's what he's speaking about when he talks about it. So I just want to finish off with, I'll share with you, anyone wants to take it afterwards, a letter which was written by Rav Moshe Feinstein in 1984, this is just about the democratic process. He totally endorses the democratic process. He said, this is what he said in his letter, on reaching the shores of the United States, Jews have found a safe haven. Okay, the rights guaranteed by the United States Constitution and the Bill of Rights have allowed us the freedom to practice our religion without interference and live in this republic in safety. A fundamental principle of Judaism is Hakolas HaTov, recognizing the benefits afforded us and giving expression to our appreciation. Therefore, said Rav Moshe, it is incumbent upon each Jewish citizen to participate in a democratic system which guard the freedoms that we enjoy. The most fundamental responsibility incumbent on each individual is to register and to vote. Therefore, I urge all members of the Jewish community to fulfil their obligations by registering as soon as possible and by voting. By this, we can express our appreciation and continue and contribute to the continued security of our community. It's very clear what he says. So who you vote for, your choice. But the fact that you should go and vote, the motion says, definitely something that he endorses totally. So just finish off with a little quote, okay, which is just, I just caught my eye. Which is, it said, a man said to his children, I taught my kids about democracy tonight by having them vote on which game we would play after supper and which pizza we would order. I then pick the game and the pizza because I am the one paying the bill. If anyone wants to see the letter for Ramosha, there's some copies here. Amen.
I wonder whether Ramosha would have said that the choice was between Biden and Trump in his day.
I don't think he would have said. The Babbage Rebbe, who was one famous exception, is this off microphone now? Is it switched off?
No, it's been off.
Okay. The Babbage Rebbe, with one famous exception, I don't know what it was, some issue, he always, the traditional Chabad was, always never took sides. Never took any sides. He backed off, even in Eretz Yisrael, never got involved in the political process. And that's the position I would say. So I think that they wouldn't say. Unless it's... just let me ask you this about... I gave this talk in another show, shorter version of it, and I said, it's not... I don't think you put people notice you should vote for him, this one, that one, Rabbanim. It's not... We left to people. If there was one exception, it would be when you had something which was absolutely a Jewish issue. So if there was a plan to ban Shechita, for example, then it was quite clear that if you voted for one person or the other, that might be different. But generally, you shouldn't get, you know...
You should come more often.
What?
One question.
Did I? What? Sorry. Sorry?
Can I just ask a question? Yeah. Shabbos morning, see? Young marriage service, what time it starts? 9:15 or 9:30?
Usually 9:30, but they're not having one this week. It's a joint davening.
You've been invited to a bar mitzvah, though?
No, so the mitzvah's in the main shul.
In the main shul?
Yeah, it's joint because there's a lot of people coming, so it's so the main shul.
So that's 9:15.
Was he here? Was he appointed? Was he appointed?
That's the point.
Every Shabbos can also have a name, Mishpacha, and when the Pesach comes to Shabbos, it says the Mishpacha, which means the Shabbat. Each Shabbat is also captured within itself, besides the code of the number of the Shabbat. The Beis HaVoisom says that Ashi Yisha, Ovid, Mishpacha, the Ibrahim, Mishpacha, Ashi, Yoko, Mishpacha, Ovid, sometimes the father was a Muslim, the father was a Muslim,